Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to Shop Talk Show. We have two sponsors for you. Environments for Humans are doing an online conference called People Skills for UX. That's the URL, literally. People Skills for UX. It's actually funny because it reads as people kills, people's kills. Okay. People Skills for UX is a conference all about people skills for UX. The skills no one told you you're needed. We'll tell you more about that later in the show. And lynda.com, that's lynda.com. Beautiful, Dave, is the web's largest online learning resource. Yeah, we'll tell you more about both those things later in the show, but for now, let's kick things off.
Shopping Maniacs, you're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, a podcast all about sound effects and web design and development. I'm Dave Rupert, and with me is Christopher Coyer.
Well, thanks, Dave. It's lovely to be here today. It's a hot day, apparently, around the globe.
Hot day.
Hot day. We have with us Mr. Tim Holman. Hey, Tim.
Hey, how you doing? Beautiful day. Fantastic. I need a soundboard of my own, I think.
Oh, dueling soundboards would be my dream and Chris's nightmare.
Get real. No, it's just always a surprise to me. So it's a pleasant surprise every time. Tim, we just saw each other not so long ago in New York. We had a little Code Pen meetup, then kind of hung out. So New York, that's where you live these days, hey?
No, that's it. I've been here for 3 years now, which is a fair amount of time, enough of my accent to go from Australian to strange. Daily struggle for me at the moment. My mom makes fun of me when she talks to me, which kind of hurts a little bit, but.
So you're born in Australia, you're an Australian citizen, and that's your thing, but moved to New York for tech reasons or?
Yeah, that's it. I came here to work 3 years ago, a company called Quickie, which was really cool. And then I worked in advertising for Wieden & Kennedy for about a year. And now I'm at Tumblr for coming up on 1 year now, actually.
Nice. Okay. So it's fairly new, but not too new. I'm sure you feel very comfortable at the land of Tumblr. That's pretty cool. So came to work at Quickie, which doesn't exist anymore, but was cool in its day and did some kind of interesting things. But whatever, it was kind of a Yahoo acquisition, and then
I seem to not be able to like avoid the grasp of Yahoo. I've just turned to embracing it now. So,
yeah, because that's true. Because Tumblr is Yahoo too, right?
Yeah, I was saying before, I'm like in the office now, in probably the biggest conference room, which was the only one available, just trying to look important so nobody comes.
There's like waterfalls.
There's a lot of plants. Somebody was dusting them before, so.
That is nice. Yeah, I need a plant duster. So, I think I know you. I'm trying to remember how I could have possibly become aware of Tim, but it's probably through like you. I run CodePen and you use CodePen to make crazy awesome stuff. And it was kind of like Quickie was kind of this like dream team of like crazy good demo makers, because it was you making stuff and Hakeem and Justin Windle. And like in the early days of CodePen, we're like, wow, who are these guys and what is happening here? These are some crazy stuff being built.
Oh, that's it. They put together a really good team. I think I was only just getting started around then. So I was pretty fortunate, I think. It was amazing, really. Like, I sent out a tweet, like, hey, I'm, like, finished school, just looking around for a job. And Hakeem reached out, and, like, 3 months later, I was moving to New York. It's a pretty easy decision in the end to just, like, hey, we'll move you here, and, like, we'll help you get a place, and you can work with these amazing people, and, like, pretty much signed the contract straight away. Which is great.
Nice. And so, like, what are you at your role right now? Are you a front end developer? Do you think of yourself as UX? Do you have a title? Like, what's it like at Tumblr?
No, it's really great. So, I'm I guess my title is product engineer, not that that really means anything. And I work on a team of about five on the Tumblr dashboard. And so like our team kind of has a mix of like backend and some kind of people in the middle. And then I lean really heavily towards the front end, just trying to make it like as nice as possible. So if you see, if you see something nice, it's probably me. If you see something unnice, it's probably me screwing up.
So you're on the, you work on the kind of the, I don't know, the heart and soul of Tumblr, really. If it wasn't for the dashboard, you couldn't post anything, right? It's like the, or the, I guess the apps you can too, or not, or is it limited to the,
that's kind of like a recent development. Everybody that does front end work in that kind of area is learning either Android or iOS, so we can join in the whole picture. So ideally, like I have a feature that we want to build, and I can do that on, you know, all the platforms.
Oh, is it mandated that you do it on all the platforms? You wouldn't like release a new dashboard feature that's only on the web, or would you maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's like increasingly mobile, which is hugely understandable. So it's really nice to, I don't know, you have a feature that you build and you know, your team builds it fully from the ground up, which is nice. I don't think many places do that. You know, it's like, oh, there's an iOS team and an Android team. We're trying to really kind of merge them all together.
That's pretty interesting, and it's because like mobile's like unavoidable, you know, right? It's,
I mean, the mobile traffic is, it's interesting. Like a lot of people that create on Tumblr, it still happens in the web, but on the flip side, like a lot of the consumption, you know, is moving towards, oh, I've got 5 minutes on my phone, I'm just going to go through and get caught in the Tumblr whirlpool of amazing stuff.
That's funny though. Do you sense any danger in that? In that, like, I don't know. It feels like pigeonholing a little bit. Like, well, on your phone, those users only want to browse, and on the web, those users only want to create. Like, is that dangerous thinking, or do you have facts to? You know, I'm sure you have data to. You know, it's that classic thing. Like, let's not assume what people want to do on mobile.
That's it. I mean, we're all, I don't know, maybe a good way to say it is that we're all on the same team. So we're trying to make it good on both. Some things definitely work better on mobile. You know, there's some behaviors that kind of come by default, like, you know, Instagram and Tumblr is the same. If you double tap, you get like a like, and therefore it's like easier for people. So it happens more often, and that changes everything.
Yeah. Cool. You're also kind of known for making kind of crazy little libraries and weird experiments and things like that, the most recent of which being one of those back to top button that in this particular one just happens to go really, really slowly and play elevator music on the way back up.
Yeah, that came from a Tumblr hack day. Apparently, I wasn't allowed to implement that on the website. But I thought, oh yeah, I'll build this into a library and... it was really popular. I don't know. I must have built that at like 1 o'clock. My hack day patterns are like hang out and then do stuff and then like look back the next day and try to piece it together into a presentation. I did just get, oh, it was so silly. The audio file in that demo, you know, it only ever plays for about 15 seconds when you're scrolling to the top, and it's like a 4 minute thing. I just got my AWS bill and it's like, it's through the roof. Yeah.
Oops. Yeah.
Good one.
Ah, yikes. That's the challenge of owning a popular library.
Yeah, that's
feel good. Free to move it to a CodePen hosted asset. We'll pick that up for you. Don't even worry about it.
It's all good though. Yeah, I really enjoy making these. It's almost like jokey things. I kind of like see it as a commentary on the things that we do. I don't want to like get stressed out at work all day and. Have a bad time and just enjoy making the smaller fun things, make everyone laugh.
Yeah. So everybody, if you want to see Tim's work, Tim's website is tholman.com and check it out. They're all kind of presented there nicely. That's the one. Shut up and look.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's right. So whenever somebody's talking to me, I'm like, hey, I want to show you this thing. And now I look like a big pretentious douche, but I haven't had
to. Oh, you'll be okay.
Yeah.
They'll get over it.
I already forgive you. Let's see. There's not much news up in the news bin. We kind of have not been doing that so much lately. But I did put one little note in here from somebody who wrote in to the show I guess, which is I'd like to read because it's kind of proof that some of our advice isn't total bullcrap. Justin Lexama wrote in, man, Lexamana wrote in our episode with Aaron Mentili. And he wrote in, and I just wanted to give you guys a little update.
That was the show where I think go ahead.
I really appreciate the advice you guys gave me, and it really motivated me to finish my portfolio and get a new job. It was definitely a culture problem at my job. I think this is a serious problem that many people face. I took my time, created a strong portfolio that I'm proud of, and we'll put the link in the show notes. After I put it live, I got a new job within a week at this firm, Real Art. So I think Justin wrote in that he was a little unhappy and that kind of he just his you know didn't wasn't vibing with the people he worked with necessarily.
And the boss and like, didn't respect like employees' time and talents was kind of the core issue there.
Right, and so you know you're not beholden to any particular place that you work. You know I think if you're unhappy, it's absolutely within your right to move. And how do you do that? Well, you have a nice looking portfolio, and you say you're looking for work, and you'll get snatched up because there's definitely a kind of labor market gap in this industry. So if you're good, you're in.
This is tangentially related, but did you guys follow the TalkPay hashtag that happened, I guess, last Friday-ish?
I did a bit. What do you think about that?
It was very interesting. It was just kind of to raise awareness about minority and people of color, women compensation in our industry. I thought it was really good for some people. Some people also were like, whoa, I'm like undervalued. And that's good to know, but it doesn't make you feel good.
No.
So, but one thing I took from it, a friend had mentioned that their only pay like increases were from switching jobs. I mean, maybe they got a promotion or something like that, but like,
I've heard that quite a bit too. Yeah.
Switching jobs was the biggest way to like, level up your pay grade. And I thought that was a really interesting kind of trend. So
I can definitely relate to that as well. I think like I've changed jobs twice in New York and it's been big jumps like that. I think maybe part of it is also kind of like a compliment to the landscape at the moment. You can like in 1 year, we've got so much open source stuff, even, you know, on CodePen and everything. You spend a year and you probably are three times better than you were at the start of that time. It's not so much on the job training anymore. It's like, yeah, it's everywhere.
So you think companies are behind that if they started being a little more free with their pay raises without losing people, that would be a good move for companies? Or do you think that's like just doesn't work and changing jobs is...
That's in their best interest, right? To keep you around. I think like you get more valuable the longer you stay, personally.
Yeah.
That would be an interesting experiment, wouldn't it? To have a job at some kind of big-ish company to be like, we're going to do something crazy. Like, you know, everybody gets double pay or, you know, that would be wild. I wonder what would happen.
Your big party, I think.
I would buy a hoverboard.
Yeah.
I've been looking to get one of those recently.
Yeah.
I didn't have much to say in it. I, you know, sometimes I feel a little weird, like, oh, a new hashtag. I haven't seen this. I don't know. I'm such a unique position that anything, I don't know if I have anything to contribute to that. That's useful. But maybe, I don't know. I do think it's like the amount that we earn is a little too guarded generally.
Yeah.
Things should be a little more open.
It's kind of weird taboo. I don't know. Especially when I'm talking to non-developers, I feel really awkward about saying, "Oh, I own this much," because I know we're pretty valued, right?
Yeah. There is some. I mean, the counter argument would be that it, you know, if it's all hidden, then there's no like animosity that you can look at the person next to you and you don't really know what they make, so you just out of sight, out of mind, and it's fine, you know. I don't know if that's a really good argument, but I think that's the traditional thinking, that I don't want to look at their face at the water cooler and just know that they make $10,000 more than me. That might like not motivate me very well.
No, absolutely not.
But the crux of that situation, though, is like, what if there's somebody you consider a peer like entirely. But they are making, you know, 20,000-30,000 less than you or something dramatic. And like they do the same work as you, but because they're a woman or a person of color, they're making like way less. Like, dude, that's devastating. That's a effing problem. We have to fix that. Like,
so maybe being transparent about it is part of the solution there.
Yeah. It sort of helps it, but yeah, I mean, I was raised probably to keep it close to my chest. So it's tough to get over that, but you know, I think, mm-hmm. I don't know, a little bit of alcohol solves all problems there, but you know, I hear friends on Twitter or whoever or whatever, you know, they're freelancing and they're having trouble. Like, they're like, oh man, having trouble making rent, or I want to move into this apartment or whatever. And I'm just like, oh, bud, or, you know, you should just charge like $5 more an hour, like, and probably make that up over a couple months, you know? And so that's the thing too, is I think people probably undervalue themselves, or if you're in a tight jam, hopefully that can get fixed, you know, through friends encouraging you about your value. That's what I would say.
Yay. Tumblr's hiring, right? Isn't that just to
everybody's hiring, but you know, I'm here, which is a huge perk.
work with Tim. #.
There's not an empty seat next to me, but we can make one. Yeah, we just opened up like a new floor in the office as well. It's super nice. We had it for Cinco de Mayo, so my Wednesday was a really slow day after that for everybody.
It really is that everybody is hiring, right? I mean, especially, would you say it's true that if somebody's good, any smart company, whether they are like officially trying to fill seats or not, should probably snatch them up. That's kind of a thought I've recently had. Like, if some like great designer comes on the market, your company would be stupid not to snatch them up, you know, because the really good people are so rare.
We have an interesting thing going on here. I think like I was at Empire.js recently speaking, and it's amazing to see like how, I don't know, for example, React, like how quickly that's kind of like penetrated everybody. And every single company is telling me how they're building their things with React. And I think like Tumblr has a really, really nice approach to their framework. We have just a really simple thing built on top of Backbone. And although it's not like this flashy new toy, it's really, really, really easy to just like pick up and get going with it, which, yeah, it's a special thing.
Yeah. Cool. Do you have anything before we get into Q&A, Dave?
I got nothing. I could probably dig something up, but I'm just too lazy. I could dig up drama, but I don't want to.
No.
I'm taking the high road for the first time in my life.
Okay. Well, let's get into it. Let's do one question quick. Actually, you know what? Let me do a sponsor. I want to talk to you about the People Skills for UX Conference. It's an Environments for Humans conference, which you're familiar with. It's online. It's one that's in conjunction with Rosenfeld Media, who do all those great books. Like, it's one of those tech-ish book publishing companies where like you should probably own every single one of them, kind of, because they're all awesome. And it's a combo conference between them. And it's, you know, the conference is called People Skills for UX, which I just think is so cool. Like, I think this might be one of those topics that it's a classic, you know, it's where everybody's aware that you need to have good people skills, but talking about it as a virtue, as a hireable skill, as a big part of your toolbox is that, you know, those little like people make those little like dumb bar charts or like Photoshop skill, HTML and CSS skill. Like, this is going to start being a new bar. Interpersonal skill, 9 out of 10.
Maybe I could build a browser plugin that hijacks those and messes it all up.
Yeah, that sounds like a Tim thing.
I have one of those on my website, guys.
Oh.
It's really old, but I like really, it.
What are your percentages at? That?
Oh, it's a relative graph. It's perceived interest versus relative skill.
Oh, and yours is a lot nicer. Yeah.
It's all about like what I'm interested in and what I'm kind of okay at. But
so PHP, your relative skill is much higher than your interest, which is much lower.
Yes.
But your interest in responsive web design is 100, but your actual skill is only a 90. That's pretty funny, actually.
It's interesting when somebody comes in, like I do interviews at Tumblr, and when somebody comes in and has these bar charts, they definitely don't go ignored. You know, if you say CSS is at 90%, you're going to get like a serious question, and kind of we have like a little bit of an expectation to like live up to. So
these things actually work.
Wow. So they paint a target on your back too. Like if I say I'm really good at beer making or something, you're going to be like, well, explain the pH balance of Cascadia hops.
I mean, it's an attitude thing. Like my attitude and our attitude towards interviews is like, let's find what this person is best at, and then like let them thrive at that. And you know, sometimes those charts are all we have to go by.
Hey, that's good though. You like know what they're into. Like, I don't know. JavaScript,
I can't believe you both agree that those charts are useful and interesting. Okay. I'll take it.
Hey.
But maybe, so what these people skills thing are sometimes called soft skills too, you know, which is kind of I don't like love that term, but I do love this idea. I like the idea that this stuff is as important or more important than like your ability to write React code or something. I think I would rather work with somebody who's like writes a really good email, clearly can demonstrate empathy, you know, is just good at dealing with other people and mediating situations and stuff. Like the tech stuff you can learn, but the people stuff you just can't, I guess, unless you go to this conference, which I don't know if the idea of this is to level you up or is to just kind of help your understanding of how this works or what, but you should definitely check it out. The URL again is PeopleSkills4UX, and you know, mark my words, in the next couple of years, this stuff is going to be talked about in a bigger way than it is now, because it's just so dang important to making teams work, to making to any kind of team work. But you know, that's what we are on the web is people, teams building things. They need to work. One big team.
People's kills for UX.
All right, let's do an actual question here. I'm going to read one from Nick Spiel, who says, "I live and work in Australia." I recently had a trip to New York City. Wow, this is relevant. Even though this was sent in a long time ago. It's not even a Tim-specific question. It seems that everyone I talked to there was involved in some hot tech company or project with pretty mad salaries and benefits. One guy said that the worst thing about his job is that he had to go downstairs when he wanted a smoothie.
Oh, come on.
Rough. Given that we don't even have a coffee machine at our office, I would have punched him out then and there. But not sure that's probably bad people skills. You should probably go to this conference.
There's a conference just for you, Nick.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? This one is just for you, Tim. There's another Australia one that isn't. But this Nick wrote it because I think he knew that you're Australia to New York. So he has a few questions. How do you find living and working in New York versus Australia? Question one. Question two, do you feel more inspired being in a city like New York, or does the rat race burn you out a little bit? And level three, these are all pretty integrated, but what level of impact has this new environment had on your skill progression? So basically, what's it like in New York versus Australia, and has it been good for you as a person?
Right. Yeah, it's been really good for me. I grew up in the country. Where you know everything is pretty relaxed. Australia is a really relaxed place, and I think that comes across in the tech a fair bit. Where you know, if I made something nice and I wanted to like show people, you kind of just get like a pat on the back. I like to relate it to music a little bit. Like it's much harder in Australia for a band to kind of break out because everybody enjoys it, but nobody's going to like follow you around and enjoy that. So. I moved to the city, and then I moved to New York when I left Australia. And yeah, it's definitely changed me in a lot of ways. I'm much more competitive, I think, which is kind of weird, but that's good.
And so is that New York has given that to you, you think?
Yeah, that's it. It's definitely come from New York. In weird ways, like if we're out bowling, I'm like, oh man, it's serious. I'm not going to
Really?
You're not going to do like a half. I don't know. Maybe there's like a degree of professionalism. Like I don't like to do things halfways. Now, and I like to finish what I started, which has come across from here. It's helped me with work as well. Like there's a lot more meetups and there's a lot more people. There's a lot more opportunities to kind of engage in the things that you like. And that's been a big thing for me.
And you don't feel burned out?
Not so much. I burnt myself out once at Tumblr, and it was when I was doing April Fool's work. And I decided, like, it wasn't actually a real project, and we all decided, hey, we're all going to do this thing. And, like, we killed ourselves with the scope. We just kept adding things because it's so exciting. I don't really tend to burn myself out a lot. Like, the projects that I do on the side and that I do at home, they're, like, remedial, you know, it's opposite. They're relaxing and weird, like it's an elevator music or something like that, which is nice.
All right.
That's interesting. Do you feel like, I like the last part, do you feel like the new environment has made you better at what you are? Do you feel like a rapid progression being in a big city?
Yeah, I really had that. I mean, I came to New York really, really green. I got to work with, again, Hakeem and Justin, who are phenomenal developers. And that brought me up to speed a lot. I think it broke down some barriers that I had as well. Like I ask 1,000 questions now. I don't know. I lost a little bit of the homemade figure it out yourself attitude and just went for like, yo, give me the answer and I'll like improve on that and I'll remember that. And it's definitely an interesting attitude change. Hmm. Yeah. I'm much more open about that, especially when I don't know something. And I don't know most things.
That's interesting. What do we got, Dave? Do you want to?
Well, I was just going to ask real quick: is Hakeem a real person or just a robot that codes like a Turing complete machine?
He was actually visiting me recently. He's a really great guy. I mean, he's been working on slides.com. Mm-hmm. Which is, I mean, I've used it for the last 4 or 5 presentations that I've done. It's ridiculously good, ridiculously easy. And that's good. He's a great guy. You know, it's crazy. Like, if there was ever a fork in the road in my life, it was like a single tweet, and then he kind of got me the opportunity to work in the States, which is unbelievable. So, like, I guess that goes to show you shouldn't, you know, not put yourself out there at any time either.
Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
All right. So let's go to the next question here. We got James Kusachi writes in, recently I've been seeing homepage CSS animations that simulate an app or website running. Bit.ly.com has one, or Venmo has one at this time. In these animations, the text is live text and CSS driven, not a video or a set of JPEG images simulating an animation. My question is, how do people do people hand code these, or is there some tool I don't know about that makes these timeline driven animations easier? I'm sure you guys can imagine it's like a website running in a phone, basically, kind of like that animates through. Have you guys
right?
Seen
I mean, you
this?
Can imagine a video that's like demonstrating how an app works, but James is saying, how would you make like an animation that kind of shows you what it's like using this app, but it really is the app operating, you know, like how would you approach it? Is there like a timeline tool, or would you just like hand code it, or would you, is there like do something? Well, I don't know. Look at the one on Venmo. How would you like approach that? Or would, have you seen anything like this or done anything like this?
It appears like it's a React app. So of course React is the hotness.
Yeah, I would suspect that it's just, like, you have to code this stuff for your app, right? So just reuse it in here. Although this, in this case, it's an iPhone app, so you'd have to kind of replicate it with CSS. But the Venmo one looks easy enough that it's kind of just like inserting a new DOM node, and it's just like animating the height of it to appear. It doesn't look overly complicated. And they're a big enough, kind of cool enough company that I suspect that these are probably real transactions that are coming across here. you know, because they seem super random and they have the data anyway. So why not just use it? This one isn't particularly complicated, although I could imagine if there's a whole thing where you're like, you know, you click this and this slides around and shows a new thing. And I don't know, like, that's the thing though. Like, why is that so difficult? You have to code it for inside the app anyway, just kind of reuse it on the front or simulate some clicks and just rock and roll, reuse what you've already done elsewhere.
Yep. Tim, are you back? We got you. Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about like animations and like, let's say you wanted to on the homepage of a site kind of replicate what it looks like to use that app. So like simulate things sliding around and clicks and stuff. Have you ever done anything like that, or how would you approach it if you did?
Oh, I haven't. I think Quickie had something like this, but we ended up using images, and that was back in 2012. When I see a phone on a desktop, I don't necessarily immediately think to interact with it in the first place. But I guess that's more of a question of UX or UI or, you know, how you're feeling.
Yeah, it better move automatically because it wouldn't be obvious that you could.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. I would say SVG is probably not a bad choice for some of this stuff, just because it's nice and easy to animate and resolution independent and that type of thing, you know, if it's just a replica. But I would say rather than just start with, I'm trying to replicate or fake this approach, I would try to, if possible, make it the real production CSS and stuff that is what the app is anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got things that you can reuse as well, like it's like the design work. The design work's already been done.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, you know, is it what's wrong with a video too? You know, that can be kind of neat too, because then it can show an actual finger doing things and whatever. I'm not sure we have.
I learned at a conference the video stuff is super easy to do too. Like you just fire open QuickTime with your phone plugged in and you can record your screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Working, that's a hot tip if you didn't know that. You can record that your iPhone screen. It doesn't, you know, simulate a finger or anything. So it would have to be fairly obvious what you're tapping.
No finger simulation?
I guess not.
Yeah, there's a room for a library right there.
There is. Maybe it could use the camera and record what your finger looks like.
You can't really call it finger.js, though. You need a better name.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Or you could. Okay. Let's do another one. Jason Alvis writes in, I'm a front-end developer, and I use a mobile-first approach when building websites. When I'm given the designs for a site to start building, I see components on the page that have been removed from the mobile design, but they're there on the desktop tablet view. So it's kind of like a crippled mobile experience, I guess he's saying. There's less you can do. I try to explain to my team that there's really should be a very good reason to remove things from a mobile view, as each device should have the same experience for the user kind of by default. And if that's not the case, it can be frustrating if the content changes between the two. Their argument is, and we've already touched on this a little bit, that the mobile phone users won't want to read posts. It will just make the page longer and everything, because everything just stacks on top of each other on mobile. I explain to them that you don't know what users are going to want to be able to do. So I guess they're having kind of a holy war debate here. Is some people at the company are making assumptions about what mobile users want to do. Jason is saying, don't make those assumptions. So what's the deal? First of all, there's this assumption that everything just stacks on mobile. That's kind of like a weird assumption to make, right? Anyway, have you, what's the story behind the Tumblr thing? It sounds like you guys do, occasionally do make some assumptions like that, although I shouldn't call them assumptions. Maybe they're backed by data.
Oh, that's it. I mean, it's crazy. Like, Tumblr has 7 years of website and only like two or three years of app. So the app is still catching up in many ways to the functionality, but then by no means, you know, we don't want to just stop building the website as well. So we don't really have like feature parity on the front end, but we do design mobile first as well. I think we have like the right attitude, where the website should be a richer experience. But there's also some interesting things, like if you're an app first and people use the app and then go to the website, you do want some things to be similar as well. So like we recently moved our navigation into a pop-up menu instead of being perpetually there, which did upset a lot of people. But it's, I know it's catering for both sides of that picture, or at least trying to.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Dave? Do you have, you know what they're talking about here? You have a lot of responsive web design experience. Do you ever kind of just start nuking stuff from the mobile view, assuming that people won't use it, or you know what they mean?
Yeah, like I've been there, and just get the job done is my new mantra. Like sometimes you just hide it or whatever. But my brother asked me a question just the other day, like, how do I hide like this big hero carousel thing? Cause no one wants it on mobile. And the right answer is, well, if no one wants it on mobile, who wants it on desktop? And the answer is no one. But you know what? Somebody at the client really wants it, but they don't want the performance hit on mobile. So, okay. Like, yeah, you just hide it or you progressively enhance it in, like you Ajax it in, and that's what you have to do. But like, you know, there, I don't know, maybe somebody wants to see a big image when you get to it on a desktop and you don't want that on a mobile. So I don't know. I don't see the harm in hiding it but make sure the thing that we have to do as developers is make sure that we don't, I'm not forming my thoughts. I was sick this week. We have to make sure that like mobile performance is the number one thing in on everything. So
if you're going to approach it that way, and it was determined that you need to keep this thing on mobile and you need to remove it, or you need to keep it on desktop and you need to remove it on mobile, that perhaps the best way to approach it is to run some kind of JavaScript check, like a match media or something, mm-hmm. to determine that the screen width is a big enough size, or some whatever determination you want to make. And like Dave said, Ajax it in this hero image or whatever. So you assume that it's not there. And if the situation is such that it should be there, then you pull it in. That way the default experience is it's not there and there is no mobile hit, as you put it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I would say. I personally, I'm kind of like coming full circle, and you know, like we do things on desktop and I'm like, why would you ever do that? Like if it's not good, like if it doesn't work on mobile, like why does it need to be on the desktop site? And I've asked clients that question and it's, you know, ended in like awkward Skype calls going down in flames. So I don't necessarily recommend it the way I did it, but that's an option for you, is just to be like, if it's not important, why is it? Why are we calling it important suddenly? You know? And I don't know. It's all for the user too. There's things like also too, like if you're like, well, people don't want to read the article on mobile, and it's like, well, how garbage is the article? I get, and they suddenly want it on desktop. I mean, that's maybe, but like if they're on a desktop, then maybe now they have more information that they have to look at, because you have like 16 columns now. That's overwhelming the user. So maybe that adding more text doesn't help them. So you have to think of, it's a balance really. So did I answer that okay? Did I do
you
okay?
Sure did, man. We got lots of opinions.
Yeah, perfect.
Cool. So I'm going to do another sponsor real quick. Lynda.com, that's LYNDA.com/shoptalk is the URL there. You probably know of them. You probably heard of them. It's an enormous learning resource on the web. It's like video-based training. So you log in and have an account. And of course, if you use our URL, the /shoptalk URL, you get 10 days free to explore their entire library and watch whatever you kind of want to watch. There's lots of stuff on there. There's stuff that we talk about, but there's, you know, tangentially related stuff, like, you know, all this app development stuff we're talking about. Do you want to build an Android app? Do you want to build an iPhone app? They have courses on that. They have Xcode 6 courses. One's called Swift Programming Language First Look. They have iOS development with Swift Essential Training. So this is modern stuff, you know, get up. And Swift isn't even that old, and they have a bunch of courses on it, you know. Brand new courses all the time, thousands and thousands and thousands of courses. You could just spend some time browsing and making playlists of stuff that you want to watch for when you have downtime, which would be cool. There's a new course on SVG on here, pretty cool. That's my wheelhouse. Might check that one out. Okay, very good. Thanks to lynda.com for sponsoring our podcast. I even have a course in there. You'll love it, you know? Learn from top experts. All right. Do you got one you want to read here?
I got a next question from Chris Ellinger. Writes in, I'm a 33-year-old former self-employed photographer trying to break it into the web industry. I'm a completely self-taught designer developer with experiences in HTML, CSS, PHP, WordPress, Rails, JavaScript, jQuery.
All the stuff.
My question is, how do you stand out in a field with so many talented people without a killer resume as a 33-year-old advanced beginner? Really enjoy listening to the show. Keep up the great work. Thanks. So this is a good question.
You're 33 and you're junior.
I have this theory, and somebody just asked this in the chat room before as well. Like, how do you get somebody to recognize you? I have this thing which I call reverse stalking, where, and I totally did this. I found people that inspired me, and go through that blog, and like some people, like Hakeem, for example, has a huge history. You know, you can go back and you can see. It's the same with mine, actually. Like, I don't know. When's the earliest entry in your blog? Like, mine's 2011.
A little older. That's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. But I can go back to 2011 and I can follow up and I can see what, like, Hakeem was doing or what Justin was doing. And I could see the places that these people were in. And I, you know, to be honest, tried to just emulate that as best as possible until I found my own unique way and direction of going. That's Tim's theory of reverse stalking.
Yeah, as a kind of way to level up. But Chris here is a former self-employed photographer. He knows a lot of stuff, but doesn't have a killer resume because he's new. Calls himself an advanced beginner, which I think is appropriate, and it's cool to be kind of self-aware of your current level of this type of stuff. But you're probably a little bit above a beginner, I would think, Chris, especially being that you're not like a kid. So you're probably like, I don't know, have some focus and stuff in life, know what you want. Plus you have some design skill. So, you know, just because, you know, if you were a self-employed photographer, you know, you probably have some taste and you have some idea of what makes good design. I think that's probably pretty valuable. So you probably might underestimate yourself a little bit, but I see what you mean about not being able to stand out because it's kind of like, I don't know, you don't have this amazing portfolio. I think you could also cheat a little bit, Chris. First of all, play with your strengths big time. Like if you're this a good photographer, you know, have you ever seen a website that's just like a really beautiful full page image and then it's like kind of dark, maybe black and white, and then just has like really clean like Proxima Nova with just your name on it somewhere and like a few of the skills you learned? Like just looking at that was like, would be like, you know, like, ooh, this guy's good. You know, like there's some mystery there, you know, like it just shows that you have some taste and class and stuff that would get people like interesting. And I think that's just kind of like a trick, you know, like use your photography skill to bust this thing out.
You should definitely leverage what you've got. I think like, I mean, web design is hard for a developer. You can make a website and you can see that it doesn't look right. But, you know, with a background like that, you can make it right.
Yeah. I would like as a small shop, and maybe that's somebody who might be looking to hire you. I mean, dude, we always needed photography for clients because we'd have a client, you know, come to us and be like, I want a website. And it's like, cool. What do you do? Oh, we do mops. And you're just like, oh, that's hard to sell. Like, and so, yeah, like you could be like, oh, but BTW, I take excellent pictures of mops and I'm a very skilled photographer.
Secret passion.
Yeah, secret passion. I think it's, you have a skill that a lot of us crave and you know, I don't sacrifice your photography background, like, because so much of composition and, you know, hierarchy in a photo applies straight to web design. So.
Yes, it does. If
that's an encouragement, that doesn't help you get a job, but that's an encouragement, I would say. So,
yes. Sam Lyons writes in, I run the membership system for a national sports organization in Australia. Sometimes I get complaints from one particular state about the system being slow or a certain function not doing what it should. When I try to replicate these issues, I am not able to do so. Do you guys know of any tools that allow you to test drive a client's computer remotely and run diagnostics on things like internet speed, or you know, get a better understanding of what's causing the problem? So he's building a site. The people are having trouble using it, but it seems to Sam that these problems are localized geographically. What would be the
state? Is it in Australia? It's probably like Tasmania. Our internet's like, oh man, my mom's house, the internet's like dial up perpetually, and it has a 1 gigabyte limit, which my sister chews up in 30 seconds on Facebook.
Wow, that's what, well, 1 gigabyte limit, and then you start paying by the kilobyte or whatever,
and then it slows down to the slowest possible pace that you can imagine.
Whoa.
And it's been like that for years and years. There are definitely tools on the web to simulate this as well, right? You can simulate package loss if you're a heavy backend. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe the Chrome DevTools might do it. Maybe I'm...
The Chrome DevTools has emulator. Like, it's really counterintuitive. Open DevTools, click the phone icon, and then you can take off all the device emulation stuff and then set connection, monitor your connection, and drop it down to like 3G. That's a pretty good, or DSL is a good one.
So it really does. It simulates slowness. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I didn't know that. I thought wasn't there like Wireshark or I forget.
There's a lot of like things you install that do it at your computer level, but the browser level is pretty great.
Torture somebody, you can just open their own and slow it down for them. That's a pro tip. To get ahead of the competition, you know?
Yeah. You'd build, we call it empathy building as a positive spin. I find that's a great tool. I mean, in Austin, Texas, we're like getting fiber rolled out. So massive speeds here. But I'm going to have to rely on that to do my job right. So I think that's the thing too, is don't be afraid to cripple your connection. So.
But there may be, you know, that simulating it is one thing. But then there's like, this is literally different geography. So it would be hard to simulate what an actual broken router is or something, you know, some particularly thing that's real, that's wrong. But Sam was asking about test driving. Certainly there is stuff like that, isn't it? I feel like listening to other podcasts, they're like, you know, isn't there like one, like, you know, like go to meeting or whatever that, maybe not that one, but it allows you to actually like control another person's computer. It used to be like an Apple specific way to do it. I'm surely there's Windows ways too, where it's for like IT people, like install this because I want to do tech support for you from a distance. And this gives me full access to your system. I move the mouse. I open the folders. I do that stuff. I think there's probably lots of software that does it. I'm sure there's lots of people screaming out in their head because they know the names of the ones that do it. And I can't think of any.
Remote desktop for Mac. I'm actually using that to do our broadcasting for Shop Talk. I go into another computer.
Well, there you go.
There's also it's this thing called VNC. The VNC is another.
Yeah. And Screen Hero for Mac too, which is not taking new signups because Slack bought them. But if that's the idea, if you can get them to install Screen Hero, that's sweet. I don't know if you've ever used it, but it's awesome.
Cool. You could even do stuff like just have them go to speedtest.net and you'll get a lot of information from that. Yeah, that should be a global service.
Somebody said TeamViewer and Chrome Remote Desktop as well in the chat.
Oh, good.
Both good options.
So, there's lots of stuff. And that would be the ultimate way, because then you're literally using their computer and can see what the problem is. Or if you can't schedule a time to do that real time, you could say, go, you know, there's lots of free apps that can shoot little videos, you know, be like, can you like video this real quick? We have people do that in CodePen support all the time. We suggest it. Like, please, could you just shoot a video quick? There's like free apps like Droplr that that you just you open the Droplr menu bar app, you hit screen video, you draw a box around what you want to record, you hit start recording, and as soon as you're done, it uploads and gives you a URL, and then you send it in. So you can be like, look, this is what I'm seeing exactly. It's broken. That it makes for good support. You can be like, oh, I see. You know, they usually, because I might see things. What's that?
I get like a bunch of random like pull requests and silly things, you know, on my ridiculous Git projects. I should start requesting videos to tell me why.
Yeah.
Yeah, video your problem, please, and then we can talk about it.
Because you'll see things that they might not see, you know, like they'll be recording their Chrome window and the little ad block icon is active and that's what's obviously the problem, but they just never think about that or whatever. Or, you know, you can see something happening that, or the way they've explained it, you're like, oh, that's totally not what I was picturing. Anyway, a video's worth 1,000 emails. Mm-hmm.
So I have a question, Tim, related to Australian internet. Does having lived through that, like, kind of spotty, slow, capped bandwidth scenario, does that affect how you design and build websites now?
Yeah, in a sense. I mean, I have a crippling distrust of databases. So almost everything I build is, like, static, and it's on S3, and it's quick, and it's there. Like the useless web is the same. I could put a database on that, but like a JSON file does the job. That is weird, but it's definitely affected me in that way.
Just because you like the database timeout is the thing that breaks your back.
Yeah, I don't trust it. I mean, the internet's still atrocious in Australia, and they're still like debating how to fix it and get things together. Yeah, I guess the database is the big one for me, and that's just kind of how it's affected me. It's a lot easier to work on the front end and do, you know, really nice things in real time with instant feedback than it is, yeah, over a network like that. I never thought of that, though. Being tainted.
No, that's, I imagine it forms like your opinions on how you code and stuff like that. So, or build just in general. So that's it. Hey, little cultural episode here of the Shop Talk Show.
Horse's mouth. Fernando Delgado, this will probably be our last one here, writes in, hey guys, what are your thoughts about this trend that has become quite popular for the last 2 to 1 years? That's a weird way to put that. Facebook already stopped using it as its main button in its app, but a lot of designers are still using it, even in desktop sites. What do you think of it? Fernando is, of course, talking about the hamburger, as we've all started calling it. I never liked that name. Bugs me as a name, but oh well. Does Tumblr use it? What's the scoop?
We had like a few iterations of this. We had it was like a little person with the hamburger. We called it the man burger. And we had that for a while, but now we've just gone back to a user icon.
Really? It's like a little, like the bust kind of?
Yeah, like a little silhouette. I kind of miss the man burger, mostly because I just like animating those things. But yeah.
It could be, that's funny because that doesn't really scream menu to me, but I guess it could be anything. I mean, it could be a star shape or something. And once you've learned that tapping that thing opens a menu, you kind of get it forever.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the behavior is pretty linked to like, hey, what's this at the top left or the top right of the sticky nav bar? I try not to stress out too much about what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah. What do you got any like burning opinions about the hamburger, Dave?
I read those posts and I just laugh and spin in my chair. I mean, sure, there's a better solution, but like what? Like tab? You have 5 tab navigation buttons at the bottom, and that's better. Sure, awesome, cool. Does that like ever work on mobile? No, like. No, it doesn't. Like, well,
I just think
maybe
there's way too much thinking happening around this.
A little too much thought leadering,
yeah,
in this department. But I think you know, it's like, what else are you going to do on a website? And you have to do something. One thing Fernando kind of questioned about was like full screen menus, right? Like where it takes over the whole screen, right? Doesn't fly out panel, takes over the whole screen. That's the same thing. You have to hit a button to launch a menu. Same thing. Like,
yeah, I don't think that's going anywhere anytime soon, right? It's like, I don't really, and it's not like I stay awake at night thinking about the hamburger. I mean, unless it's an actual hamburger, and then sometimes.
Yep. We might put this in the old FAQ section here. I think we're done talking about the hamburger at Shop Talk Show.
Are we done? Are we post hamburger here?
And our FAQ is going to be a GIF of Dave spinning in his chair,
just
that's
cackling.
Gonna be our answer.
I'm the penguin, basically the penguin.
I generally like try to go into anything looking like, oh, you know, if we're going to talk about this thing for 2 days, it's probably not worth it, especially if it's like a button. You know, you can't spend all your time in that space and come out a better person. Or a smarter person or anything like that.
If there's like a better solution that's just like in the whole world is like, ah, yes, a better solution, that will be awesome. And then 2 days later, somebody's going to be like, well, better solution isn't better because performance, I did a test on my dumb website. And so it's just like, okay, here we go. Even yeah. better solution is under
that's kind of one of those things where a little data is actually, you know, it's like I'm all about data. Everybody should be all about data. It's so great, but as soon as you have a little bit of it, then immediately it's gospel forever. You know, like we A/B tested this one time, and this is the results of that A/B test. So argue against that.
Yeah, try to just try.
Kind of mind reading API, and you stop thinking about the menu, and it opens. That's probably the way to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Why not just like we just start listening to voices and whenever a user just starts saying like, well, how do I like, then it's just like, hey, I know Clippy flies on the screen. He's like, hey, I noticed you were looking for something.
We built a Clippy clone for April Fool's at Tumblr called Copy. It was a photocopier. And he was pretty helpful, you know?
He's helpful. That's good.
They had it right. Microsoft had it right, guys.
Do you remember that big purple monkey that used to help you navigate websites? Does anyone remember? He was animated 3D.
Bobo? No.
I forget. But
you can make him sing. You can make him sing.
Mm-hmm. Well, all right. Well, we'll dig into this, some investigative journalism for the next episode of the Shop Talk Show. But before we go, Tim, thank you so much for coming on the show. For people who aren't following you and giving you money, how can they give you money? And what's one thing you'd like to plug before you leave?
Yeah, I mean, if you're in New York, I'm always down for a beer. You know, that's not really money, but that's good fun. We can talk about whatnot, and I don't know, I'll plug tumblr.com/jobs. Come hang out.
In fact, shoptalkshow.com/jobs has a Tumblr job posted on it at the moment, so either of those places.
Perfect. Well, great. Well, thanks you so much. And it's T.W. Holman on Twitter. That's right. And so follow Tim and follow Shop Talk Show at Shop Talk Show. And yeah, you can just by giving the way to give us money is to just tell your friends that you like the show. Heart us, star us, favorited us up in your podcatcher of choice. We really appreciate that. Like to Chris said, if you hate your job, get a new job over at shoptalkshow.com/jobs. And Chris, you got anything else for us here?
Shoptalkshow.com.